Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. This week we're going to spend the hour talking about finance, money, inequality, poverty with two different guests. Later in the show, we'll be joined by Paul Cielo of the Public Assets Institute to talk about the state of working Vermont this in 2017. But first, we'll spend our first half hour with Vermont State Treasurer Beth Pierce. Pierce is a Barrie resident, a Democrat, who is now serving her fourth term as treasurer after being appointed to the position in 2011. She has more than 40 years of experience in government finance at both the state and local levels. Treasurer Pierce is the newly elected president of the National Association of State Treasurers. And last month, Beth Pierce received the Public Servant of the Year Award from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. Treasurer Pierce, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me here.
So I couldn't resist counting how many women are state treasurers in the country. I won't put you on the spot, and I'll just tell you, you are one of nine by my count. And this speaks to a larger and more serious issue about women, money, and financial literacy. So maybe I'll just ask on a personal note, how did you come to be an expert in financial matters?
Well, you know, it's an interesting career. As I started off, I was interested in economic development, and I ended up working as a labor market economist for the CETA program, the Comprehensive Employment Training Act, when I got out of college. This is so far back, 1976. But I remember going to a meeting. I was in charge of the working on the economic plan and what jobs we should be training for and so on. And I had the Economic Advisory Committee getting together. And a gentleman looked at me and said, "Are you the secretary?" And I said, "No, I called this meeting." And so I've been in a field that's been more predominantly male over the years. I think that for me, it's been about doing the right thing. I love finance. I like making finance work for people. And it is a field that is changing, however. As I look back, things have changed. We're moving in the right direction. We need equal pay. We need a lot of other changes as we move forward. But I think that the world is changing. I'm glad that there are nine women treasurers. I'm looking forward to the point that when there are the majority or 50-50 here. So it's something that's important to me. Women in finance is interesting because women generally live longer than men. They have some interruptions in their careers, typically, or over the at least in historically, and they have to make that retirement income last longer. And because they make less than men in the workforce, that's a bit of a problem because you're starting off behind the eight ball. You've got a situation where you've made less on what you can make those savings for retirement, and then you have to stretch them out longer. So we've tried to work with various groups over the years to address those issues and to try to encourage women to look at opportunities to save for retirement. One of the comments that we always say is, you know, pay yourself first. And make sure that you have the discipline to put those dollars aside for future retirement. Women in the workforce, you know, have had less access to employer-sponsored retirement programs over the years. And frankly, Vermonters as a whole, because we have a lot of small businesses, under 50 people employed in businesses, and those businesses have less incidents of retirement programs, employer-sponsored retirement programs for their employees. So we worked with the legislature this past, it's been about a three, four-year effort to come up with something called the Green Mountain Secure Retirement Plan. And what that does is allow small businesses to pool their resources, to work together to come up with an employer-sponsored retirement program. We call it the Green Mountain Secure Retirement Plan. And the goal will be to allow, starting in January of 19, so we're in the planning phase now, starting to work through a process where we can pull assets from multiple small businesses. And in Vermont, we believe there's between 94 and 96% of the businesses are small businesses. And let them pool together to create a retirement plan that will have, because of economies of scale, lower fees, best-in-class investment opportunities, and allow individuals that haven't had the opportunity to save to do so. There's a study that was out there that was done a few years ago, and it said basically for low and middle income workers that having an employer-sponsored plan meant they were 16.4 times more likely to save for retirement. And we think that's important.
We're talking with Treasurer Beth Pierce on the Vermont Conversation. If you want to join this conversation, if you have questions about some of the things that she's talking about, public retirement and some of the other things we'll touch on, feel free to call us at 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. What's wrong with existing ways of saving for retirement? That would be 401ks and IRAs.
Well, there are a variety of products out there, evidence has showed that when it's in the workplace, a couple of things happen. Number one, by doing that, you've got the employer that's giving it some credence, and that helps in terms of working with employees that are interested in it. Second, you can do auto-enrollment, and we find that auto-enrollment, starting right from scratch, you just got that job, you're going to put a little bit aside each paycheck for your retirement or for future savings and future initiatives is a good thing to do. From the employer side, it reduces the administrative burden because doing this, you know, if you've got a small business, you're working 24/7. If you could work 25/8, you do it. The bottom line is, you got a business, you're trying to do all things. The last thing you need to do is to be trying to look at a variety of different retirement options and say, which one can I bring in? What are my fiduciary responsibilities around these? This transfers a great deal of those fiduciary responsibilities to a central group, a third-party administrator that we will be working to select. And it allows them to concentrate on their business, but provide a retirement option for their employees.
Do you know what portion of Vermont employers provide a retirement benefit?
Well, we believe that based on an AARP study, I'm going to do it by numbers, that 104,000 Vermonters do not have access to employer-sponsored plans. That's a big number. And it's a big part of our workforce.
It's about a fifth of the population of the state.
Yeah. Studies have said that that about 50% of employers under 100 employees or less offer employer-sponsored retirement plans. I believe do not offer, and I believe that number is even higher for Vermont. Someplace around 60% do not offer employer-sponsored plans with businesses that are 100 and less of employees. So for us, helping those employees find a retirement option, not looking at the myriad of options, not getting caught with potentially sales sides that don't necessarily meet with your needs, having a best-in-class that's been vetted, low fees, by again, pulling those resources, you do get those economies of scale. We think that that's important. And it's important for the employer, too, because it helps them recruit employees. It's a good part for the workforce in terms of the benefits.
How unusual is this for Vermont to have a public retirement system? Do other states have this?
A few states have been working on this model. We will be the first state to offer a multiple employer plan of this kind, a voluntary plan. A few states have worked on something called Secure Choice, which is a non-voluntary plan. They're working in Oregon and a couple of other states on different models. So we're probably one of the first out there. This particular model, we will be the first state.
We also have something here in Vermont that I believe is somewhat unique, and that is your commitment to spend 10% of the state's operating cash invested in Vermont. Explain what that is. How does it work?
Certainly. Well, we call it 10% in Vermont, and it's a great program. It started from a group of folks getting together in November of 12, and it was in our conference room. We supplied the coffee, 8 o'clock on a Tuesday morning. Some legislators would come, people that were interested in affordable housing, renewable energy efficiency, variety of different folks. You know, so someone who wanted their own currency, the Bankers Association there, the credit unions, variety, a very eclectic group. And basically, we said, how can we do more local investment? What can we do to move this forward? And in that first year, we came up with some ideas to invest about $16.5 million in affordable energy, affordable housing and energy. And those were adopted by the legislature. We are very proud of that. We then came up with an idea to do a revolving fund to help us with some of our state buildings. When you look at some of those buildings, I call them gushers in terms of energy, and we wanted to be leaders in terms of energy efficiency and energy retrofits. And I think we've made a great deal of progress, and I appreciate the work that BGS Building and General Services has done in that area. So we created that. We looked and said, let's codify this, let's move forward, because that was about 5% in Vermont, and we said, let's move forward, and let's get us to 10%. So basically, instead of investing in Wall Street, we're taking 10% of those dollars. Our average cash position is someplace between $330 and $350 million, and we're putting that into local investments in affordable housing, energy. We had public hearings to decide which areas, and about 80 people attended. We also talked about doing something, and we've done this with VSAC, a $4 million investment in one of their borrowings to lower the cost of the borrowing and to lower the cost of college loans. Prefer no college loans, but if you're going to have one, let's try to get it as low as possible. And it was the lowest interest level in the history of VSAC when we were able to do that. We've done work with the Vermont Community Loan Fund, about $1 million with them. What we've done there is part of it was used to help with child care and folks that have child care facilities and providing loans. And the more recent piece, about $500,000, was used in terms of our working landscape farms and food. And so we're looking at different areas that we can invest in to help spur economic development, to help create jobs, and to keep it in Vermont.
What is the total that has been invested in Vermont? Forgive me if you already said this.
So, we have $33 million in commitments at this point. Right now, about between $23 and $25 million is currently invested. We've had some loans that have matured and are being repaid, and we're going to be sending those dollars back out. We're being a little careful right now, with the changes at the federal level and a little concern about federal aid and what that's going to look like and how that might impact our cash flows. So we're shortening up some of the maturities in our loans right now, but we're still out there. But we're shortening up the maturities as we're taking a look. As I mentioned, we have between $333 million and $350 million of operating cash. But it's not all there at any one point in time. And at certain points of the year, we're much lower in terms of our cash position. For some reason, after April 15th, those numbers pink up a little bit, and we get a few extra dollars there.
And I'm curious, as with the public retirement, do other states have this local investment requirement that you know of?
No. We've actually talked to two states now about doing it, and we are literally the first that have done this. There are other models out there. There's something called linked deposits, which we also do. We have a deposit program to work with local banks and things like that. But we were the first to do this 10% in Vermont. And I really want to thank the members of the General Assembly. As I said, we started in November of 12. It's gone through several pieces of improvement as we've moved forward. Representative Botso, who's over on House Commerce, Senator Polina over has been very helpful. We've had a lot of support, bipartisan, tripartisan support on this effort.
Let's turn to an issue that's been in the news. And again, for listeners just tuning in, we're talking with Vermont State Treasurer Beth Pierce, and you're welcome to join the conversation at 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. Lake Champlain cleanup has been in the news. It's been a source of contention between you and the governor. Can you just walk us through, this has been a very kind of confusing story to follow with lots of ins and outs and ups and downs. Where has it been and where are you now?
Well, I try to concentrate on the positives, not the contention, and looking at where we can find opportunities to work together, and I think there are. And I'm hopeful that this legislative session we will be able to do that. Back a few years ago, I was not in the room at the time, but one of our legislators, they were looking at who could do a financing study to take a look at all of our water, not just Lake Champlain, but all of our lakes and rivers, and what we could do in terms of financing. How much would it cost? What are some of the alternatives? And they gave me the assignment. And I said, thank you. And at first, I'm going to be honest, there was a little bit of reluctance. It's a little outside of what we normally do in the treasurer's office. But really got into this and really excited about it. It's important when you look at our lakes and our rivers. It's important for the health and safety of Vermonters in terms of our waters, but also economic development. We have about $2.5 billion worth of tourism activity in this state. And a lot of it is based on our natural resources, including water. So it's very important for Vermont's economic future. It's important for our health and safety. And it's important for our way of life. I mean, when you think about the lakes and rivers, that's part of, you know, whether you're out there camping, whether you're out there, you know, in terms of getting out and swimming or do fishing, whatever it is, it's part of our lifestyle. And it's extraordinarily important that we have clean water and make the investments.
Well, and also this is not an abstract idea. I mean, we've had really some dire situations.
Absolutely.
With algae blooms, lake beach closures and such.
Absolutely.
We are at a critical point.
Absolutely. You know, my grandchildren were up here several years ago, and we were going to all the different state parks, and I had to call up and check on water quality at each time, and it was a little scary. I will tell you, by the way, that we got a great state park system, and people have done a great job with that, and the kids were thrilled. It was also a very I'm thrifty. I'm a treasurer. It was also a good way to provide an inexpensive but valuable vacation for them.
All right, so what is the price tag on lake cleanup, the current number?
Sure. So we were working off of a number of about $2.3 billion as the total cost over a 20-year period. That's all in, and I want to point out that is not what the state needs to come up with. That is a combination, looking at our regulatory process of what the private sector, what municipalities would need to do, what the state would need to do to accommodate this. We then broke it into what we call Tier 1 and Tier 2, what absolutely you must do to comply with the EPA changes, as well as state statutory changes that have been made. And that was and then Tier 2 are things that we should be doing and can help the situation and hopefully bend the cost curve. Tier 1 costs were about $50 million a year. What we said is that we were targeting a plan to develop about half of that borne by the state, about $25 million. And we broke this into Phase 1, an interim phase, and then Phase 2. Phase 1, two-year plan, we actually have implemented, and that was a $25 million commitment over and above what's already being done. So this is in addition to what's being done prior to this in 2016, for instance. And we said, let's look at ways that we can do this. And we were able to get a commitment from the governor and from the legislature to put $25 million each year. It's actually about $24 million and change. To do a lake cleanup project using some of our capital dollars. We had a one-time opportunity. We had some delay in some of our capital projects that had already been authorized and dollars that had already been committed, and said, let's use some of these dollars, push out some of those other projects, and do this. So we were able to do the first year, so we're in that first year, and then next year without raising taxes, and do that. That also gave us time to come up with a longer-term plan. And while we were looking at opportunities there, we went through a process. We had 23 different stakeholder meetings with businesses, with farmers, with nonprofits, with state officials, and 23 different stakeholder meetings, 1,000 people involved. We went through 60-plus revenue options, looked at those, and what we've really come down to is some type of user fee that would be associated with essentially polluters pay, and linking it up to the amount of pollution. some type of, based on some type of user slash parcel type of analysis, not a flat parcel fee, which doesn't get to that user piece of it. It's a little harder to administer that way. So we thought that that would take some time. The interim 1-year, 2-year plan are there to let us get, you know, to a glide path to that longer term plan.
So what is the, looking at an article in Vermont, a Digger, where it's headlined, Pierce Pan's plan to pay for Lake Champlain cleanup with capital funds. What's the nub of the dispute there?
Well, I think the long-term plan is that we need to come up with a long-term method. And I'm all for using existing revenue sources, but they need to be defined. They need to be predictable, reliable, and stable and built into our base budget. To the extent that we're able to do that, I think that's very good. Using it entirely from bonding was not an approach. I think that a portion can be bonding, and it does fit, and we did, as I said, in that glide path, use that. But I think we need to concentrate on what that longer-term plan is going to look like. A combination of existing revenues, a combination of some type of user fee, and get that settled in this session. I think that the difference is a matter of degree. I think that we're all in on this. We all want this to happen. I do believe that capital funds are appropriate, but no more than half of that $25 million presumably less would be through bonding and working on pinning down that long-term solution this year so that we can hit the ground running in fiscal year 19 with the long-term plan.
Okay, we have just a few minutes left. Time flies with all these topics we're covering here, and I want to touch on a program that you've been involved in implementing called ABLE, Achievement of Better Life Experience, that is aimed at people with disabilities. Tell us what that is.
It's a great program, and I want to just compliment all the folks that we worked with individuals with disabilities, various advocates trying to move this program forward. ABLE is based on something that was done by Congress in, I believe, 2014 that permitted states to do this. We worked again very closely with House Commerce on this project, and we got legislation that allowed us to do it. What it is tax-deferred accounts. It allows you to put money similar to those college savings plans, which the IRS code is 529. These are 529A, and it allows you, hey, I am a geek, what can I say? But it allows you to set aside money for future expenses and to earn interest on those dollars that are tax deferred. The beauty of the program is it also allows you to go past those benefit limits. Right now, if you're an SSI, other types of benefit programs, you're not allowed to have more than $2,000 of assets. This allows you to accumulate up to $14,000 per year. And it's up to 15 now. It's indexed, and this year it moved up to 15,000. And it allows you to do that and to save for the future. And I think about that from a caregiver side. Think about if you are the caregiver for someone and you say, what's going to happen when I'm not here to John or to Jane? This allows you to provide retirement security. It's linked to our financial literacy program so that we're trying to work with individuals to provide that side to it as well. It's a great program, and it allows for self-sufficiency for individuals with disabilities. You know, when we announced this program, I think it was back last February, one of the folks that talked about it is a participant, and he's in his 20s, and he said, imagine going through your life never having more than $2,000 of assets. This allows you to do that. We have 116 people enrolled so far. It's just getting started, and we're ecstatic. We're starting our public relations campaigns around it, getting the message out.
Okay, well, we're going to have to leave it there. Treasurer Beth Pierce, thanks so much for joining us on the Vermont Conversation.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.